everybody. Welcome to Sapphic Carol Club, where we explore lesbian themes in Cate Blanchett, Rooney Mara, creamed spinach over poached eggs, and anywhere else sapphic spinach roams. We're your hosts. I'm Laurel Carol Nova.
And I'm Audrey Rooney Mara. Hey, guess what? This is our last episode of the year of 2021. We made it through this really special year. And we are in it, the season of Carol, the only Christmas Carol that matters, Carol. And we're so excited to talk about this movie that we've decided to split this discussion into a two-parter. So today we'll be sharing the Carol poll results with you from our Instagram and discussing the questions/topics y'all sent in. And then for the next episode, part two, we will go gloves deep into the film and talk about the source material, as well as its notorious author, Patricia Highsmith.
So some disclaimers, get ready for a steady stream of spoilers, because that is what's coming your way. And this is a good time to hit pause and watch the film if you haven't already. We'll be here waiting for you, just like Therese waited for Carol after she abandoned her in the Midwest. See, we're already spoiling stuff. All right.
Okie dokie. So we're assuming you've seen the movie, and let's dive into these poll results. So we asked everyone.
We asked all of Instagram.
All the people in the world. First, have you watched the movie Carol? And were you surprised by this?
I was going to ask you the same thing. I was not. I was not surprised.
No.
I was expecting the number to be high. 95%, yeah. Though. So 95% said
almost
yes.
Almost 100%.
Nearly 100% yes.
And 5% no. So hopefully the 5% are yes now. If you're listening. Yeah.
Or they're not listening, and that's also fine.
Yep.
So the next one was, do you consider it one of your top three favorite queer films? And 59% of you said yes. That top three is a pretty short list. So this one, yeah, I think I was expecting a majority and not a huge majority, but yeah, so 59% said yes, and that means 41% said no.
Yeah, I think this lines up with my expectation too.
Is it one of your top three favorite queer films?
Yeah, I would say it is. Don't at me. Where would you put it in your list?
I think it's in my top five. It's been a while since I've tried to rank my faves,
yeah.
But it's high up, definitely, for a lot of reasons. And it's not in the top three for a couple of reasons, so, yeah.
There's a lot of good stuff out there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of bad stuff, too. Okay, and then we also asked, have you read the book it's based on? So the book is The Price of Salt, which I think came out in 1952 by Patricia Highsmith. And it initially came out under her pseudonym, which was Claire Morgan. And it was later released in the 80s and then the 90s. Actually, we'll talk about this next episode when we get into the book. Anyway, so 40% said yes, they have read the book, and 60 no. And this one was alarming to me. I thought it was going to be like maybe 20%. Maybe.
20% yes?
Yes, yeah. So mm-hmm. I'm really surprised
yeah.
and pleasantly
Same.
Surprised.
Yeah. I have not read the book.
You haven't read the book?
No.
Well, you're part of the 60%.
I am part of the 60%. Okay. The next one was, do you think Carol left her gloves on purpose? And 89% of us said yes.
Which
I said yes. I would.
11%
I said yes.
No. How did I answer this? Did I say yes? I may have said yes, but I was on the fence. I feel like I would have answered maybe if that was an option. But then I think probably most people would have done that. So you think she did?
I do. Sometimes.
Can you elaborate on that?
I think Carol, there was clearly sort of an immediate attraction between the two, and it looked like she was kind of flirting, and when she turned around and she was like, I like that, it almost looked like a distracting move. I don't know. I think I want her to have left the gloves, and that's probably why I think yes.
I don't feel like there's any doubt that she was flirting.
Right.
But yeah, maybe that's just like Carol/Cate Blanchett's whole MO. She's like constantly using flirts everywhere she goes.
The more I talk about it, the more my answer kind of
drifts to no.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was on the fence. I kind of wanted to think yes as well, but I actually feel almost strongly no now.
Mm-hmm.
Because after watching it again, like, I very vaguely remember this moment when they meet up for lunch and Therese says something about how you probably thought a guy sent you the gloves.
Oh, right. That's right.
And she was like, yeah, I thought someone from this, like, a man from the ski department.
Yeah.
That to me implies that she really didn't know where she left it.
Yeah.
She totally just forgot. Or
she's lying. Yeah. I think it's more likely that she forgot. Yeah. Not that she's lying.
Yeah. As much as I want to read into it. The other reason, too, is like everything else about her personality and the way that she's interacted with Therese through the whole movie indicates to me that if she wanted to use that as an excuse to ask her for lunch, she would have just flat out
asked her to lunch. Yeah.
Because throughout the film, she just says what's on her mind. She's like, do you want to go to lunch?
Come to my house. Like, invite me to your house.
Come over on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Invite me to your house. And then mm-hmm. later in the film, this is a huge spoiler.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
Like, do you want to move in with me?
Right. And then also, like, come on this trip with me. We've known each other
right.
for, like, a month or whatever.
Exactly. Even, no, like, 2 nights.
Like, 2 days. Great. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's just how things moved in the 50s. But
that's a very good point.
Yeah. So that is why I don't think she did it on purpose.
Let us know if we have changed your mind. Because you.
Yeah, what would you vote now?
You heard my mind change in real time just now. So
it was beautiful.
It's now 88 to 12. I don't know how many people answered the survey.
Okay, so final poll question was, only Kate Blanchett can make cream spinach over poached eggs sound good. And 81% of you said yes, 19% said no, and that is correct.
Do you not think that you would like cream spinach and poached eggs?
I actually probably would. I love poached eggs.
Like, yeah.
There's something about
cream spinach and eggs.
The
yeah.
description of it doesn't sound appetizing.
But then also
the
with
part,
a martini, like
dry with an olive. Yeah, I mean, I think that would balance it out because it's like so rich, right?
Yeah.
It just like cuts the gin or vodka or whatever. It just cuts through the cream
and
egg.
I might have to try this as like a, I don't know where I'm going to get creamed spinach.
I think you can
make it yourself.
You're like, I'm not that dedicated. You could probably buy like pre-made cream spinach.
Ew.
Oh, I bet you remember like Boston Market?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Didn't they have like cream spinach?
Probably. Yeah, it's like
so
a side.
So go to like a deli.
Yeah.
Get some cream spinach, poach some eggs, have a martini, get wasted, and you're set.
I wouldn't get wasted, though, because Carol did not really get sloppy.
She didn't get sloppy, but a martini is very, very booze-forward. I mean, I don't know, what your tolerance is, but
I think I can do one martini, especially with food.
That sounds like a challenge.
Ooh.
Especially with cream
the
spinach.
Carol challenge. A single martini.
Ooh, let's start this challenge.
Spinach over poached
Everyone
eggs.
Post videos of you eating this and drinking the dry martini with poached eggs. I mean, I've had a dry martini recently, and I feel like one is like,
it's basically
it's all booze.
Just alcohol. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Carol challenge. Let's do it.
Now we have some thoughts from you. We asked an open-ended question at the end of the poll.
Anything else you'd like us to talk about in our upcoming Carol episode? So very open.
So in response, Ma Larisa said, gays and their camera and piano. Ha ha.
I am so glad you sent this to us. I actually think we could do a whole episode on the photographer trope.
Oh, yeah.
Piano, I'm not so sure about. I don't know.
Is it because it's very handsy? I don't know.
Ooh. Which one? Both? Yes. Oh, yeah. Both are handsy.
The camera and the piano?
Yes.
Or what do you mean by both? Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wait, what?
Well, because you know.
You said it's very handsy, and I was like, are you talking about piano or camera?
Yeah,
and I was
piano.
Like, both.
Oh, yeah.
But cameras are also handsy.
Yes, they are. Yeah. Little dials.
What are your thoughts?
It's interesting. Like, and I guess we'll get into this later. So I haven't read the book, but I have heard people talk about the book. So the camera, she was actually a set designer, right?
She wanted
to be a set designer the book. And in the movie, instead, she is an aspiring photographer. So that was a very deliberate choice and not just like a recreation of the story. And the movie itself is very voyeuristic, right? Like we're constantly looking through windows or in mirrors and through her lens and at her pictures. So I felt like the camera was a nice tool for doing that. And then the piano, I don't know. I just thought the piano was nice. I didn't really have any deeper thoughts about the piano, but I can see how through a sapphic lens, it's like, oh, she's very tenderly touching the keys. I don't know. But yeah. That's me trying to like stretch having a piano in there.
I don't know if it's a stretch. I think like thematically with lesbian films in particular, like there's always some kind of creative outlet that connects the two characters. I mean, portrait, you have painting and harpsichord, right?
That's true.
I don't know if piano is as much of a trope that I've personally noticed as like the
camera. I wish
camera.
It had been a saxophone. Anyway. She just picks up Carol's saxophone.
I would be so happy. That would be so good. And then she plays the theme from The World to Come.
Yeah. Oh my God. Like geese having sex.
Wow. Yes, exactly. What's more sapphic than geese having sex? Nothing. But I was thinking about the camera thing, and I've thought about this a lot because there are, I can think of three other lesbian films that have the protagonist as a photographer.
Yeah.
Like High Art. Right, is the probably most famous one. Ally Sheedy's character. And then Disobedience.
Oh.
Rachel Weisz's character is a photographer.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I heard The Mermaid Singing, which is like this 80s film, mm-hmm. a little bit more experimental. She's also a photographer. There's more. I know there's more, mostly like smaller roles that I'm thinking of, but it is a thing. And like I was trying to find more about it. And there was this article that was posted in After Ellen, which no longer exists. So it's like referenced elsewhere. Yeah. There's this article that you can find on Lesbian Business Community.
Really? It's called Lesbian Business Community?
Yeah. And it's like a mirror of the one that was originally posted in After Ellen. But it's called On Film's Obsession with Lesbian Photographers by Maria Turner Carney. And so I'm just surprised I'm not finding more. It's like if I were a bigger blogger, I would write something about it. They wrote a lot, but one thing they said was the thread of photography as a tool for the ingenue's sexual awakening is a way that they can track the object of their gaze, specifically women, in a way that creates a map for the trajectory of their desire. I think in Carol, it makes sense that they didn't, I don't know what the budget was of this film, but like just logistically speaking and like practically speaking, keeping her as a like aspiring set designer, it would have been more difficult to kind of like show her art, whereas photography is like so portable.
Right.
So personal, so relatable, like anyone can kind of pick up a camera and sort of relate to that character. And then to your point about like, you know, we're kind of observing them in this voyeuristic way and she's also like observing Carol and like in this voyeuristic way.
Yeah. It also feels like maybe one of the most yearny mediums.
It's
where
super
you're just
yearny.
Like staring at someone who you're turning into like the object of your picture, you know, mm-hmm. and as they become the object of your heart.
Oh.
Gross. Okay. All right. From Baker 3305, we got, and let's just say how hot Kate looked in all her outfits. Fire emoji, fire emoji, fire emoji, fire emoji. The costumes and like all of the costumes were pretty amazing. Kate, though, pulled
she
off.
She looked impeccable and so glamorous, as she always does in all her films.
I mean, Yeah. She always carries herself in a very particular way. And I think in Carol, it just kind of came to a head. She's iconic in this.
Yeah.
Her costumes, her outfits are...
Diconic,
yes.
Let's just read these other two because they're related. So one from M.M. Duran. How hot, in all caps, Kate Blanchett is in this. 4 heart face emojis. And then Baba Becker said, the gay icon that is Kate Blanchett.
Yes.
Yeah, I think the gay icon is really interesting too. Mm-hmm. You know, she's known for wearing suits and looking ridiculous in them, like just setting everything on fire.
Yeah.
The internet on fire. And she herself is not gay, but definitely a gay icon. I think she did drag and like went to this drag show and like performed as a drag queen.
Drag queen? Oh.
A faux queen is the term for cis women who dress in drag as a woman.
Okay. Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay. From Lauren What's Up, they say how fucking adorable Rooney Mara is playing Therese.
She was adorable. Having read the book and then also the screenplay, like I feel like she did a really incredible job capturing this very internal character.
Mm-hmm.
The book is like mostly from her perspective, and it's the character is very introverted and kind of obsessive and just in her head. And I think that you see that in the film with her. I think like she did an incredible job with the material and became this character that was very relatable. And she was adorable. It's true. Oh, so interestingly, and I think we'll talk a little bit more about this in part two, this isn't the first time around that this film has been attempted. Originally, Mia Wasikowska, is that how you pronounce it?
I think so.
Was cast in the role of Therese. I think the only thing I know her from is Alice and the more recent adaptations of Alice in Wonderland. But I think it works out really well with Rooney Mara.
So she was going to be Therese?
Yes, that's right.
Interesting. Yeah, because she kind of, she looks like Kate Blanchett to me. So
oh,
like,
I can see that. Yeah. She, it's kind of like the Kate Winslet.
Oh, yeah.
Saoirse Ronan thing where they kind of look like variations of each other a little bit.
Yeah, totally.
Kate on Kate. And then I guess on the flip side of that, speaking of adorable, Marie Catherine Elba says, Rooney Mara's wig, why? Distressed face. They are both wearing a wig. And I actually didn't really catch it.
Yeah.
Like, I thought, I thought it looked pretty good.
Yeah.
The hair, so.
I mean, it's, especially for Therese's character, it was just a bob. I don't know.
Oh, it's no happiest season. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, yeah. Rewatch Happiest Season if you haven't already. No, don't watch it. Just look at screen grabs and then come back to this and you'll feel better about it.
Oh. Wow.
You want wigs? Here's a wig.
I guess it's like the opposite of a palate cleanser. Yeah. You want a wig? Take a look at this. Maybe if like your point of reference for Rooney Mara is the girl with the dragon tattoo.
I was going to say, yeah.
It's jarring to see her
in
the Therese wig, maybe.
But actually, now that you bring that up, it's so interesting thinking about her being in both those roles because they're so different. Oh my gosh.
She's just an incredible actor.
Yeah. All right. From Shayna Loves Food, we got, never knew applying perfume could be so seductive. That was a great scene.
That was a great
scene. Pulse points. Yeah.
It was so of the time. I mean, I just imagine women were doing that all the time with each other.
Oh, here. Smell me.
My pulse points, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if you said that to me. I'd know what you're talking about. I was like, pulse points? Oh, right. Like where your pulse comes from. Right.
Thing,
I get it now. Yeah. A lot in that film is so seductive that I wouldn't have thought, like, you know, eating cream spinach over poached eggs. Foreplay. Okay. Lauren, what's up? Said how sensual and emotive that silent phone call to Carol was. Mm. And Rooney's silky. I miss you. Silky. Yes. It's so silky.
Aww, yeah.
Yeah. Fun fact that I learned by reading IMDb is that obviously neither actors were required to be on the other end of the line because acting. They both decided to do it for each other anyway.
So those phones actually worked? I thought they were just props.
Yeah, I'm like,
I mean,
I know, right? That's like the
old timey one
part.
In the hallway. Definitely, it was like, ooh.
Yeah, I guess so. Mm-hmm. Unless this is a lie. It's possible. It's a lie.
Why would the internet lie to us? I don't think that's
never
possible.
Everything on the internet is true.
All right. And then another one from Baker3305. We've got why they never made a Carol 2. The Reckoning. No. Why they never made a Carol 2? I need to know if Therese moved in with Carol.
She did.
She did. Yeah. There you go. Carol 2. Done and done.
Yeah. I mean, there were jokes going on for a while that Nightmare Alley was Carol 2, right? But I don't know if they're even in a scene together.
Can you imagine? Carol 2, Nightmare Alley.
So fucked up.
Oh no.
It's just like what they jokingly refer to as the hallway between their bedroom and the bathroom. Because they always trip over the cat.
Aww, so cute.
I don't know. Like, I love how the movie ended. Mm-hmm. I feel like if they were to have a Carol 2, they would probably not last. Because I don't know. Like, Therese is so young. It's her first real relationship. Maybe. I don't know. Whatever. Maybe.
Yeah.
Who knows? But there was an interview with Sarah Paulson where she mentioned wanting to make a Carol prequel, which I think would be great because they were, you know, they had been in a relationship.
Yeah.
Two characters, Abby and Carol, prior to when this takes place. But that would be lovely.
I would. Yeah. Uh-huh. Pre-Carol.
Pre-Carol. What would they call it?
Lil Carol.
Oh, that's so cute.
Carolita.
Oh,
that's like her pet name. Okay.
Okay, so Mary said, I liked your Pariah episode a lot, but Carol, I can live without. Hashtag male gaze.
Ooh.
I don't know
Hot
if
take,
you're listening to
Mary.
This, Mary, but we appreciate the unpopular opinion, I guess. I don't know what I would call it. Maybe not. Totally respect that.
Oh, yeah. Maybe Like, maybe people who also don't like Carol just didn't take the survey, so.
That's very true. What are your thoughts on this male gaze thing?
I don't think it was male gazy. We can get into how.
I think it was male gay.
Yeah.
I think yes, it was gay male gazy.
There are definitely elements about it that I was pretty uncomfortable with.
Ooh. Do you want to elaborate on that now?
Okay, let's know.
You can hint at it and then save it for the next episode.
Okay. So not so much the age gap thing, but the resemblance to her daughter was really weird. There's an article out there, I think it's on Autostraddle or something, that is the only article I've seen. I've heard a couple podcasts talk about it. So Therese and Rindy have like the same haircut. Sometimes they're wearing almost the same outfit. They get put in similar positions, like when Carol is brushing Rindy's hair in front of the mirror. Yeah, and then like also
before she kisses her, she's brushing her hair.
Then it's like weird the timing, like Rindy is being kind of pulled out of Carol's life and Carol is now latching more and more onto this person who looks a lot like her daughter. As soon as we started thinking about it, Allie and I watched it again a couple nights ago, and once that was in our heads and that was part of the lens that we were watching the movie with, we were like, oh no, there's another thing and here's another thing. And like when she softly touches the photo of Therese as a little girl that's, you know, on her wall, she's like, oh, is this you? And she gets very sad.
That creeped me out a little bit.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, if all the other things didn't exist, it would be like, oh, you are sad because a little girl has reminded you of your little girl that you were in the middle of losing. But so that was weird. And it's like, I don't know that those themes were present at all in the book because I haven't read it, but I doubt they were.
Oh, they were way more present.
Oh, what?
Oh my God. She is way more maternal in the book.
Oh God.
It's like way creepier. Even though they're closer in age in the book. I mean, I'm making that assumption. But
yeah.
She talks to her more sort of patronizingly.
Oh, yeah.
And there's more like creepy mom-daughter dynamic situation. So I think they tuned it down dramatically in the movie. And I think for me, and we can get into this in the next episode more, but like, I totally agree with you. I think the reason why it works for me is because there's this gap where they break up. They're no longer together.
Yeah.
And it's in that time period where like Therese can kind of grow into herself and become someone who isn't her daughter. And then when they reconvene, the fire is still there. And it's like that's sort of been separated.
Yeah.
That sort of dynamic from their relationship. But yeah, I get it. I mean.
But I don't know that I would say that's male gazy, obviously.
No. I think it's Patricia Highsmith-y gazy because, and another thing we could talk about next time, but she had a weird obsession with her mother.
Ooh, fun. Here we go. While we're on the subject of like male gaze lesbian films or sapphic films, like The Handmaiden felt a lot more male gazy, especially in like the sex scenes and stuff.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, on the subject, I feel there's a lot of female gaze. You're sort of participating in the film from the perspective of Therese and Carol. Like in the opening scenes, we start with this guy, almost his perspective. We're like following him, her friend, right? But then it immediately like switches to Therese's point of view. And then it kind of flip flops between her and Carol.
Yeah.
And I feel like you're in their position in a lot of ways. But I also feel like the gay male gazy in that like, so much of the film is borderline camp.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
Like Carol herself is almost like a caricature of a woman from this time.
Right.
You know, so there's that.
Like archetypical high femme.
Exactly.
Kind of,
Yeah. And, you know, it didn't bother me as much coming from like the gay male perspective.
Yeah. But Mary, if you are listening, please tell us more. I would love to hear more about your thoughts on that.
Yeah.
Okay. From You're the One, we got Am a Bit New. Why is the movie so questionable?
So I got some clarification on this.
Oh, did you? Yeah.
She was like, why is it so controversial, basically? And I was like,
Is it?
Yeah. I don't know if I would say it's questionable or controversial. Like, I feel like it's universally praised by critics and lesbians alike. I mean, obviously there's some exceptions, but
not universally, but like
Near universally praised.
Universally
praised by lesbians. No, I shouldn't say that. There's probably plenty of lesbians who don't like this film. General favorable reviews of this movie. And I think especially for the time that the book came out and the film itself being like really well done, not just from a lesbian point of view, but the story and cinematography and everything. Why is it questionable?
The age gap?
Yeah, like, probably the age gap. There's definitely that questionableness to it. Also the mother-daughter reminiscent relationship, potentially that it was directed by a man and it's about a lesbian relationship, you know.
Yeah.
like all movies.
Yeah, right.
There's always questionable elements, but...
Very white. I don't know. That's another thing that was like...
I know there was... This last time I watched it, I noticed towards the end of the film, there's a black couple walking down the street. And I was like, oh my God, is that the first time?
Like, no, there any... was... In Harge's house, one of their maids was like
black
woman. And then I think there was one other black person, but also in like a... Oh, in like the cafeteria at this department store, there was... a black man eating food. Like, he's an employee or something. It's like,
yeah.
Wow, really? Is that like...
I mean, it's not representative of the time, right?
It's true, but I feel like you can do it. Just do it anyway.
Just do it,
like,
yeah.
Just make it feel like it was part of the time.
Like, yeah.
It was a very white time, yes. However, I feel like if we're suspending disbelief for this fictional story, we can also include more black people.
It's not fictional. There's some truth.
Okay,
to
it's semi-autobiographical.
Yeah. No. I agree with that. So, but yeah. Generally speaking, I don't think it's like super questionable compared to some other stuff out there.
Yeah.
Okay, so two people asked us to talk about the age difference. Portrait of a Serial Vampire. Hello, baby Heather and Emmy. By the way, if you have not taken their survey on the film Portrait of a Lady on Fire yet, it is not too late. But we did hear that you have about a month to do it. So don't wait if you haven't already. You can get the link from their Instagram bio. It's Portrait of a Survey on Fire again. Good time to take it would be right after this episode. Anyway, back to the show. We are talking about the age gap between the two characters in Carol. And this is something Angie also asked about. So there is an age gap in the book.
It's like 10-ish years, right?
Yeah, it's about 10-ish years. In the book, Therese starts out as 19 and Carol is like 31, I think. And by the end, apparently 2 years pass, which makes sense in the book, less so in the movie. Mm-hmm. In the film, I think I read somewhere that Therese is like 20. No mention of Carol's age. I'm going to guess she's not trying to pull off 31. I mean, Cate Blanchett looks amazing and timeless, in my opinion. If I had to guess, I would say like she's trying to play mid to late 30s. Mm-hmm. At the time of filming, she was actually 46. What do you think?
Right. So there's actually like a 16-year age gap between Rooney Mara and Cate Blanchett. I don't know. Like, how old's her daughter supposed to be? Like, five or something?
I think five or six or something, or six or seven. I can't remember.
So I don't know. Maybe I would say mid-30s, sure.
Yeah, mid-30s.
Yeah. Although that feels late for a woman in the 50s to, like...
It does, but she has been, as she's established, like, she's not conventional. And, you know, she was with Abby for many years before Harge, and so...
Okay, yeah. So
or I don't know about many years, but...
Yeah, so...
Let's say mid-30s. Let's say 37. So it is a May-December romance, as they say. Yeah, I guess, I think my question is, if this were a heterosexual relationship, would we be having this conversation? Because this is very normal.
I would definitely. It bothers me so much.
But I guess it's what I'm trying to say is like it's normalized. It's in a lot of movies, a lot of relationships. It's like not abnormal to see like a 20-year age gap in, you know,
with an older
man and a woman. And like,
that's true.
It just seems like it's more called attention to in queer relationships, maybe, or at least lesbian relationships. This is pretty standard, I think, for the time, especially in like these pulp novels with, you know, a younger woman, older woman, because the people writing these probably couldn't imagine a different type of relationship where you didn't have more of like a maternal situation, right?
Yeah. It's funny. The point that you just made is something that I actually think about a lot. When we first started talking, I was thinking about like, I don't know, like some Alec Baldwin movie. I can't even remember. But like, if you think about any movie with like Tom Cruise, I don't think ever plays opposite someone his own age.
No,
you know?
Or they like, keep saying the same age and he keeps getting older.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's like, it's that normalized is that like he will never play someone who is like, how old is he? Like 50 or something?
Probably
or...
in his 50s.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen him with someone?
Yeah. Who's not like 20 something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah. As age gaps go, this is fine. She's an adult, which I think was the more important thing to me.
Right. It's not like call me by your name. Or, you know. She's like
17. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, obviously in the beginning of this, like she's still kind of coming into herself and like she hasn't quite figured everything out yet. And that's what you would expect for a 19-year-old. But she is an adult and she's making an adult decision. She lives on her own, you know, like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's responsible enough to have like saved up money like to like pay for her rent in advance. So there's that.
Right. Exactly. It's fine. As long as you can save money to pay for your rent in advance, you can be with whomever you want.
She wasn't like living with her parents who are having their grad student also stay with them in Italy anyway.
Yeah, and I think also if the movie had ended where they, because in the beginning, obviously, like, there's less of a, the power's imbalance, right? Like,
right. Yeah, yeah.
Carol is obviously more experienced, has more money, more power, whatever. But by the end, I feel like it kind of balances out a little bit. Mm,
yeah.
But I'm glad someone brought it up.
Yep. Ooh, who's this?
I don't know. Who is this?
From Stranger Works, we got, which eras are crying out for lesbian costume drama? I nominate the 70s. I second your nomination. That would be great.
Boogie Nights, but sapphic.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I'd like to all see more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every every single era.
Yeah.
Starting with the beginning of time.
Is there something in the 20s already? Because that could be fun. Like, I would love to see like a Harlem based.
What was when was Amy and Jaguar? Was that 20s or was that like 40s?
I don't know what that is.
Oh my god. What?
Am I in for a treat or am I in for a disappointment?
You're not in for a disappointment, but it's not just like a happy movie. I think it takes place in like World War II.
Maybe the 30s.
And there's a Nazi.
Yeah,
it's 40s. Never mind, not 20s. I'm sure there's something in the 20s. I feel like, you know, the roaring 20s, like
lesbians
everywhere.
What was Passing? That's like, is that
20s? That's 20s. I think that's late 20s, I believe. Yeah. Or it was written in late 20s, like 1929. Yeah. So 20s. That one's not explicitly lesbian, but yeah. I want to see some more future lesbians, personally.
Yeah. Great.
Sci-fi lesbians. Dystopic lesbians. Give it to me.
A 1970s dystopic lesbian drama. No, that's not the future. Okay.
So the next few are from By Babecker, who says, Carol culture. Also, Oscar snubs, Carol fandom. And then also the score, Sarah Paulson and Waterloo. Let's break this down a little bit. Carol culture, yes.
What would you consider Carol culture?
What would I consider Carol culture?
Just telling people they were flung out of space? Is that?
Yeah, definitely flinging people out of space.
You're so strange. You've been flung out of space is our language.
Obviously, like eating cream spinach over poached eggs, dry martinis with an olive.
Always a drink before dinner is Carol culture.
1950s drag, you know, all of that stuff, but make it gay.
Mm-hmm.
Oscar snubs. It was snubbed. It was nominated for Best Actress, Cate Blanchett. Best Supporting Actress, Rooney Mara. Also nominated for Best Cinematography, Edward Lockman. Best Adapted Screenplay, Phyllis Nagy. Best Original Score, Carter Burwell. Best Costume Design, Sandy Powell. It won nothing.
Wow.
Which is effed up. I think it should have won. I don't know what it was up against in 2015, 2016. 2016, I think. But it was also nominated at Cannes 2015 for the Palme d'Or.
Mm-hmm.
Best Actress, Rooney Mara, who won.
Oh, good. At least someone won something.
And then also it won the Queer Palme as well. Like another movie that we know and love.
Wait, Brie Larson won Best Actress for Room.
Oh, Room.
Alicia Vikander won for The Danish Girl for Best Supporting Actress. Yeah. The Big Short won Best Adapted Screenplay. Mm-hmm. Best Original Score was The Hateful Eight by Ennio Morricone.
Whatever.
Yeah, this is great. Best cinematography.
Cinnamon apple pie.
goes to The Revenant.
Oh.
Emmanuel.
Revenant.
Lebesgue.
What about costume design?
Costume design went to Mad Max, Fury Road, Jenny Beavan.
Okay, that's
fair. Like, okay, yeah.
Fine, I'll give it to you.
There. Yeah, she can have that.
Okay, so by Babecker's other comment about the score, Sarah Paulson and Waterloo. By the way, I really love this like free form stream of consciousness thing.
Yeah.
It's almost like a poem. Couple notes on this.
Is it a haiku?
Oh my God, is
Carol
it?
Carol culture. Oh no, right off the bat.
Right off the bat. Let's see. We'll talk about, let's talk about the score first. Since
ooh,
that's
the
what
second
you
line
first.
Is seven though. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
No, please keep going.
Please keep counting syllables.
Until you make it into something. It's a limerick. Okay, so the score was by Carter Burwell, as I just mentioned, who's probably most famous for composing, like, I think almost all of the Coen Brothers films. And Twilight. So
what?
Twilight
really? Saga,
wow. Part 1 and 2. But I was looking at his website because that's how dedicated I am to this movie. And he mentioned that there were 3 themes in this film. Their love theme, which you hear in the opening. There's also the theme for Therese's fascination with Carol, which you hear as Carol's driving Therese to her house. And then the third main theme is of absence and loss, which Aww. You hear after Carol leaves Therese. I love the score. I think it's very beautiful. And as soon as it starts up, when I watch the film, I'm just like, ah,
yeah. Yeah, I know. Yeah, same.
All right. Moving on. The next comment by Babecker is Sarah Paulson. True. She is in the film. She plays Abby, her ex, Carol's ex, as well as her BFF. I think in the screenplay and, well, at least in the book, she has a bigger role. And I know Sarah Paulson had mentioned that. She was kind of bummed about that. But
yeah.
She was a great character. I too wish that she had more scenes, but I'm here for the pre-Carol to Carol.
Little Carol.
Little Carol. Yeah, little Carol. And then finally, Waterloo. It's true. Waterloo is an ABBA song, but it's also the town that they stop in where they first make sweet love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also are found, or like...
The dude, yeah, shows up.
Yeah.
That's been following them and records them.
Gross.
Taps their, intimate evening.
Ugh.
Sends a tape to Harge. You only know this because right before Carol gets that telegram, Therese is like, she asks what town they're in, and then Carol's like, Waterloo, and remarks on how awful that is. And also, Waterloo is where Napoleon's forces were defeated by the British and Prussians, which marked the end of his reign and of France's domination of Europe. So, coincidence? Probably not.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that. That's, yeah.
You're only thinking about the ABBA song.
Okay, and then second to last one from Lauren, what's up? How perfect the final scene is.
Yeah.
It's where you finally get to see that Therese is not quite the same person that she was at the beginning of the movie. She definitely knows what she wants and what she doesn't want. She holds her ground with Carol when Carol first asks her to move in with her, and she says, no, I don't think so.
Which is, I think, the first time she says no to her, or maybe to anyone
in
the whole movie.
Yeah, does she even say no to... What's it?
She, Richard,
face.
Yeah, no, I kept thinking about him because he's in White Lotus.
White Lotus.
Like, Mr. Punchable face. I'm like, oh, you're just as punchable in this movie. Actually,
yeah.
No, I would say he's slightly less punchable than in White
Lotus.
It's true.
He's very punchable in White Lotus.
She doesn't really say no to him.
Because she doesn't want to go on the trip. Clearly,
no.
But she always
works around it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think it is, she does kind of push back in a way that she hadn't before, but not like a flat out no.
Yeah, even like when Danny sort of forces a kiss on her, she doesn't she says you shouldn't or something, and then she leaves.
And then she was like, I think she said, do you mind? Or he said, do you mind? And she's like, no, in that way, which was kind of a yes. Like, I don't know.
Oh,
like she's no, I don't mind.
Right.
So even when she says no, it's like not the no that she means.
Yeah. So in the final scene, she's a different person.
So just a technicality in terms of the final scene, there's that scene and then she goes to the party.
Oh,
and then there's a scene at the restaurant.
I'm kind of like, No,
I know what you mean. It's like the whole final act in a way.
Yeah,
but But the very final scene is, you know, when she's walking up to the restaurant, you don't really know what's going to happen. I don't know. I can't remember the first time I saw it. But she goes to the restaurant where Carol is with her buddies, and you are kind of like following her in.
But it's like super even crowded. Even there, like the host person is like, oh, you can't be seated. And she's
like, meh. You know, yeah, right. Exactly.
I think earlier Therese would have been like, oh, okay, I'll just wait.
Yes. She would have been more meek and like, yeah, totally. And then she's kind of looking around. It's taking its time to get to Carol. And then finally the camera gets there and you see Carol like in the middle of this group and she's talking to everyone. And like, it takes a few beats before she like turns, looks at the camera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in that moment, she's looking at us, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's the first time I think anyone breaks that wall. And she's staring at Therese / the audience. And she just kind of smiles. I don't know. There's something about the scene that just like kills me.
Yeah.
I think it's perfect. I really think it's a perfect ending.
Yep.
It hints at a happy ending without being sappy.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever seen a movie quite like that before, especially like a queer film. And it's true to the book too. So it's kind of unusual.
Nice. Yeah. You didn't need any dialogue or anything. It's so,
It was beautiful. That, I think, pretty much wraps up the questions and thoughts from y'all. My Black Shroud did mention one thing, which we haven't talked about, which is the differences between the book and the movie. And so we'll get into that.
We talked about it
a little bit, but we'll get into a little bit more detail about that in the next episode. So stay tuned for that. In the meantime, let's talk about our media recs, leaving you with some recs for the end of the year. Okay, so my recommendation is something that I mentioned in the previous episode, like two episodes ago, for our upcoming Queer Media Roundup, where I mentioned I was very excited for Station 11, and it was an honorable mention because it's not queer at all. I mean, the book wasn't. So Station 11 is a story about like this flu pandemic that happens in like the aftermath of that, like this post-apocalyptic world in a way. Anyway, it's out. The show is out on HBO right now. They dropped the first three episodes. By the time this comes out, maybe another episode will have dropped. And I'm going to not say any spoilers, I hope, but I am recommending it as a queer media rec for a reason.
And not just because Mackenzie Davis is in it.
Yeah, not just because, although it is relevant to Mackenzie Davis. And I just have to caveat that with like, I think they're going to get gayer.
Does it get queer in the first episode?
How do I say this without saying it? It gets queer in the second episode. And by queer, I mean there's a mention of queer.
Oh my God.
No, it's more than that. You just have to watch it.
The camera pans past a rainbow flag. And
yes. Someone says the word queer in the show. I'm just looking for any excuse for people to watch this. No, but seriously, watch it. But just disclaimer that it's kind of, the first episode's a little hard to watch because it takes place like as it's kind of happening, like everything is going down. You know, people are learning about this pandemic and it's like a little bit too real.
Yeah.
So we had to kind of pace ourselves and watch like one episode at a time. Anyway, I'm liking it more than the book.
So, okay. Mm-hmm. And you've read the book like several times, right?
Just twice, okay.
Yeah. So for my queer media rec, I am recommending a video. It's a pretty lengthy video. It's almost 2 hours, but it's a panel with, so we recently, as a planet, lost Bell Hooks, and she was a force. She was a very prolific author and contributed so much to feminist thinking, thoughts about race and the intersection of all these things, and queerness, actually, too. And the reason that I'm recommending this is because after she died, you may have seen a lot of people posting a quote that's attributed to her. And she did say it, but it's about how queerness isn't necessarily about sexuality. But in the panel, you'll get a little bit more context. So this is where that quote comes from. And she's actually quoting another person, but I think it's important to hear it from her. So it's a panel titled, Are You Still a Slave? Liberating the Black Female Body. And she's on the panel with Marcy Blackman, who is an author, the author of Tradition, filmmaker Shola Lynch, who did Free Angela and All Political Prisoners, and author and activist Janet Mock, whose book is Redefining Realness. So that's my recommendation this episode.
We'll link to it in our show notes.
Yep.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us, and happy holidays. We will talk to you next year. But before you go off and do your Yuletide stuff, please enjoy our GSMR, which features a 1950s train going around its toy train set tracks in honor of the film we just talked about, Carol. Also, trains are gay, so, you know, are that's how it goes. Yeah. So, yeah, they're gay. Come on.
Public transportation is gay.
We get trains.
Yeah, great.
Public transportation is so gay.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. But before we get to that, do you have any sapphic questions for the next show? Let us know. You can email us at sapphiccultureclub@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram at sapphiccultureclub and Twitter at sapphicpodcast. And now, train ASMR. No, gay. It's still gay. Gay ASMR with trains.
Choo-choo.